The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you?
Yeah, confused, to be honest, Howard. I wasn't quite sure what day I was on today. I wasn't quite sure if it's Wednesday or Thursday. And Thursday should be like, you know, dancing day because it's the end of the week for us. And we've also got the advantage of actually being in some level of routine because people are working and some of the schools are open. So I don't know. All of this, I think, has just kind of got on top of me today. But apparently it is Thursday and we're ready.
Yeah, it's completely insane because we all like that. You know, it's just you wake up thinking, okay, what day is it? What day is it? What day is it? Because it does. The days are just very, very confusing. It's a very strange time that we are living in. All right, let's just talk about what's going on in Israel. Prime Minister Netanyahu has officially advised President Rivlin that he has formed a government.
Which I think President Rivlin probably knew from reading the local newspapers, right?
I would imagine. I mean, he couldn't have been shocked by that news.
No, I think he was kind of hoping that it might come through to him eventually.
Right.
But effectively what we're expecting is a whole series of Knesset sessions, which are due actually a plenum session, which is due to start only at 6 o'clock this evening. And one of the reasons that it's all been delayed until the very last minute at the end of the week is because the former Knesset speaker, Benny Gantz, resigned a couple of days ago in order to allow all of this new, the formation of the new government to take place. And there is a rule that says that there needs to be 48 hours given after the resignation of the Knesset speaker for a new speaker to be appointed. So that apparently is due to take place tonight at 10 o'clock when the outgoing tourism minister, Yariv Levin, someone who's very, very close to Prime Minister Netanyahu, is expected to be elected as the new speaker of the Knesset. And then there will be, again, votes of confidence in the new government. The thing that's been quite fascinating in the formation of this government is that a lot of the key positions have not been divulged publicly or even, who knows, privately. A lot of that has been kept very, very close to the chest of Prime Minister Netanyahu and Benny Gantz, the two people who are really dishing out most of the portfolios. Some of them apparently are only going to be advising people sometime today about what portfolio they're trying to give to them. And I think this is all just about trying to avoid all the drama that might go along with giving people things that they don't want or not giving people things that they do want. But the speculation surrounding who will be the new foreign minister has increased because obviously that is one of the most senior jobs in the government after the prime minister and alongside, I would suggest, the minister of finance. And there's no obvious candidate to pick up the job of minister of foreign affairs. One would have thought that Benny Gantz would do the job because he's the next most senior person in the government after Prime Minister Netanyahu. But apparently that's not going to be the case. His English is not particularly good. And international diplomacy is not the thing for him. There has been rumor that outgoing culture and sports minister Miri Regev is going to be the next foreign minister. She's not particularly good at English either. So it sounds as if they were going to have something of a compromise as far as the foreign minister is concerned. But apparently tonight, before we go to sleep, whatever time that's going to be, the new government will be sworn in. And hopefully on Monday, we can talk about all the shenanigans that will be going on this evening and some of those new appointments.
Right. And moving on, that the proposals have been published to allow public events to be held in the near future and also to allow Ben-Gurion Airport to reopen, of course, all subject to strict rules. What are the proposals? What's it looking like?
Well, the first thing I'd like to say is, I mean, we are continuing this whole process of reopening. We're already into the third week now of the reopening, very, very gradual, very careful reopening. There hasn't been an obvious spike of any sort in order to cause the government to say, hang on, we're pulling back or we're going back into lockdown or we're putting the brakes on for whatever reason. So it's all kind of rolling, rolling, rolling. And of course, this gathers momentum very, very quickly. Indeed, there was talk about what we're going to do with the trains starting next week again for the first time in a couple of months. There have been some withdrawals about some of the statements that they're going to be as many many people as you like on the train. No, that's not the case. I'm not even sure at the moment whether the trains will be restarted next week. So there is enough confusion. Don't feel alone in terms of that feeling of confusion. We're all suffering from it. But the thing that really caught my attention was the proposals that will allow the number of attendees at a wedding to increase from the current limit, which is 50 people in an outside area maintaining social distancing, to potentially up to 100 people or even more, perhaps even in a more enclosed area. And these, this plan that was published, that has been kind of publicized, will hopefully come into effect in the middle of June. But you have to hear what the rules are. They are crazy, stringent rules. I don't know whether we could actually run a wedding like this. So there's going to be three kind of areas that the government will be focusing on. Assessing people before the event, maintaining social distancing and monitoring that at the event itself, and follow up after the event. So each wedding site, a location that hosts functions like this, will be required to open up a website. And people who are invited to the wedding will have to sign up to the website beforehand, and they will have to include their personal information. They will have to include their age and address and their phone number and their current medical status. And they will have to then get authorization that they have the green light to attend this particular event. And I don't know whether by divulging your phone number, whether they're going to be able to track where you've been and whether that's going to be an active thing that they're going to do. But you're going to have to sign up to this website, put your information in, get the authorization that you are okay to attend the wedding. Apparently, there will be a Ministry of Health representative at the wedding itself
to make sure
that everybody's maintaining social distancing. And then apparently, you're going to have to fill out forms like a few days after the wedding and then another week or two after the wedding again.
Anthony. They must get married on Zoom.
I don't know about this, Howard. I don't know what you think. I mean, who's going to be filling out forms after the wedding? How do you feel today? Oh, you don't feel good? The whole wedding goes into lockdown as a result of potentially one person, you know, having contracted the virus, you know, after the event. So it sounds a little crazy to me. And it also sounds crazy that people coming to the airport will have to come 4 hours before the time, and you will have to be, you won't be allowed to go into the departure hall with your family and friends. The family and friends outside, everybody stays outside. Departure hall is masks and whatever social distancing and everything else. Lots and lots of stringent rules about how they're going to manage that. In the meantime, foreign passport holders are still not allowed to come to Israel, at least until the end of this month, and all Israelis entering Israel. I mean, the airport is operating, but obviously when we say reopening, we mean reopening for kind of mass business rather than the current trickle that's going through the airport at the moment. So Israelis at the moment who return from abroad are required to go into quarantine for 2 weeks, self-isolation. Foreigners, not allowed at all. I don't know whether we're going to be able to operate on this basis by, you know, I mean, you know, I don't know if I can go to a wedding like that. I have to be honest to tell you.
I think you just go Zoom. It's cheaper. People can bring their own food. All right. And the National Cyber Directorate has warned the public to be alert to an increased amount of cyber attacks that are expected over the next week or two.
Yeah, so this is really to coincide with the events that we're celebrating at the moment. We celebrate here, other people not so much. But, you know, after Pesach, we have this period of Yom HaTzma'ut, and next Friday, we're going to be celebrating Yom Yerushalayim, which, of course, is the anniversary of the day of the reunification of Jerusalem following the 1967 war, where the east side of Jerusalem was captured by Israeli forces and reunified. And that is Yom Yerushalayim. And over that period of time, there is traditionally, from the period of Pesach right until Yom Yerushalayim, there's traditionally an increase in cyber attacks. We've seen that in previous years. This group called Anonymous like to try to hack Israeli sites. Up until now, to be fair, they've had very, very limited success, even though some of it's quite public. You know, you can see a website going down or some nasty advertising on some sort of website, but it doesn't really substantially go to the core of, you know, Israel's cyber world. I mean, I think most of the cyber world you know, is much better protected. So those little kind of advertising stints don't really do a lot of damage, even though there was talk a couple of weeks ago about some sort of a cyber attack on the water company that, you know, runs the water carrier system within Israel. Apparently not a lot of damage was done at all. But we understand that over the next week or two, particularly from Iran, there is expected to be a huge increase in the number of cyber attacks. People have been warned not to click on things that are suspicious, not to to get sucked into, you know, phishing and attacks of that sort of nature, spam attacks. But certainly there is going to be an attack. And we've got this cyber directorate that monitors these things and helps companies and helps infrastructure to secure themselves. And so this is a relatively well-organized thing here in Israel that we have. And hopefully there will not be any substantial interruption to key electronic services that run in Israel. And of course, also not to companies who have websites out there for marketing purposes.
All right. And Israeli inventions, I think this is just the most amazing story. Israeli inventions are being tested and deployed in the fight against COVID.
Yeah, I mean, there's quite a lot of stuff going on from all sides. One of the things that really caught my attention was this company that's now had the had FDA approval. It's an artificial intelligence company, and they are able to detect COVID-19 from CT scans. Now, it might be a CT scan that's not even undertaken in the context of COVID-19. In other words, someone might have a CT scan for an entirely unrelated and different reason, and this artificial intelligence system can then be deployed to detect anything that might be untoward within the CT scan, which is associated with coronavirus. It's a company called ADOC, a Tel Aviv-based artificial intelligence startup. And the FDA have now approved its product, and it's being deployed on CT scans. So I think that that's an interesting one. Another one that I saw, because there are so many of them, so just very, very quickly indeed, that there's apparently an Israeli drug that's been developed by the Bonus Bio Group, and they've completed a preliminary study. And this drug is all about trying to treat acute life-threatening respiratory distress, because one of the things that maybe is not so well advertised is that even people who recover from COVID-19 might well go on in life to have everlasting impact of the virus on their respiratory system. And this is a drug that apparently is under development in order to avoid the possibility that people will suffer long-term respiratory impact. And they've got some sort of a little technology, some sort of a little piece in their puzzle in the development, in the research that they've done, which is apparently being used in other things as well. So, you know, they've got like a little speciality, a little secret that they've developed in the process of developing this drug, and that a little piece is apparently being used to do other things as well in the whole fight against COVID-19. And of course, not to speak of, you know, vaccine development. So there's now a whole new industry that surrounds COVID-19, the detection, the long-term treatment, the actual treatment while people are being in hospital or whatever they're doing, and of course treating the longer term effects and the vaccinations. So it's a huge industry that's now developed around this.
Absolutely incredible, really amazing what Israel has achieved. Anthony Reich, this is where we love and leave you, and unfortunately we don't have much time for more.